please listen carefully.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Amelia Buckley.
And I'm Summers McKay.
We are part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
6 days a week, we publish positive news stories on theoptimistdaily.com, written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now, as I say every single day, clearly because you are listening to this, we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, didn't Amelia do a great job yesterday-worthy podcast. Today is Tuesday, May 5th, 2020.
Thanks for having me, Summers. I'm excited to be back.
Did it go well? How did you feel editing yourself yesterday?
Honestly, it went better than expected. I think we sounded good.
I agree. And so in our circle of self-confirmation bias, I like me and I like you.
I agree.
So it's a bit noisy in my neighborhood today. Our neighbors yesterday were cutting slate from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. and today they are pouring cement. There also appears to be planes taking off from the Oxnard Airport every 3 minutes. So I think we're going to have a hard time getting a clean recording today. Apologies in advance for the extra sounds everyone gets to hear. What's going on in your neighborhood today, Amelia?
Not much. The sun is shining. Looks like we're going to have another great day of weather. I got up and enjoyed some coffee with my roommates before we sat down to record, and I watched a nice family of seagulls hang out in the field across the street.
That sounds like a pretty fabulous day. There is this Facebook group called A View From My Window, and I know you're not real active on Facebook because most people under 40 aren't, but this group where people have been posting pictures of their views from their quarantine, and some of these pictures are absolutely amazing. We are trying to get an interview with one of the founders of the group, but I think there's something like 80 million people in this Facebook group. It's insane. And I posted a picture from my office window of my little garden that I look out in, but I think I'm one of 300,000 waiting for approval. Anyway, I like the image of a view from your window with the flock of seagulls in the field.
That sounds so cool. I'll have to join the Facebook page. I do make my way on there eventually to check out the Optimist Daily page.
Thank you for stepping into technology of the past. Well, thinking about technology of the future, let's just hop into these stories. Sound like a plan?
Sounds good.
Our first story from the business section of the Optimist Daily is how to reopen our economies to work for people and the planet. A few weeks ago, we shared a story about how Amsterdam is adopting a more sustainable donut model economy. Restarting our economies after COVID-19 gives us the unique opportunity to institute more sustainable and equitable economic policies. Just like the conversation we had yesterday about California and their stakeholders group of 98 stakeholders, there's a lot of opportunity for change if we get together and implement it. In today's story on the Optimist Daily, here are some economic changes we can implement to help fight climate change. The first step, let's move beyond GDP. This measurement has been championed as the indicator of societal and economic well-being, but it doesn't really take into account factors such as equality, environmental health, and happiness. Many countries like Portugal and South Korea have lower GDPs than the United States, but a much higher quality of life indicators. Expanding our assessment of societal well-being beyond GDP, which, for those who don't know, is gross domestic product, will allow us to truly evaluate citizen satisfaction and economic sustainability rather than simply the quantity of goods produced and sold. The next move, rethink infrastructure. Energy production for electricity and heat is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. Employing innovative and sustainable building strategies is key for making our future cities more eco-friendly. Additionally, widespread implementation of renewable energy generation will substitute energy previously sourced from dirty fossil fuels and create an estimated 42 million jobs worldwide. We talk about this at length on the Optimist Daily, but green energy is a huge business opportunity. It is a do good, do well moment. Invest in transportation. Efficient and accessible public transportation reduces emissions, improves air quality, and makes cities more human-friendly. Expanding pedestrian and cycling zones, as many stories we've been talking about, including those from Milan and France, reducing parking for private cars, and expanding public transportation to be more affordable and widespread will make our cities more enjoyable, equitable, and environmentally friendly. Next up, let's transform agriculture. Last week, we talked about the benefits of agricultural microgrids. Supporting the transition to sustainable and regenerative farming practices will not only reduce deforestation, soil erosion, and water pollution, it will also create more nutritious and resilient food sources for the world's ever-growing population. Next up, let's support circular economies. Increasing repurposing and recycling while limiting the use of raw materials will address the rising plastic pollution crisis and save our precious natural spaces from being turned into landfills. Loop is a great initiative which operates on circular principles that we have written about before in the Optimist Daily. They offer many everyday products we depend on in reusable, returnable containers. When you're done with that canister of ice cream, just ship it back to be refilled with zero waste. Let's also improve healthcare systems. If COVID-19 has taught us anything, it's that our healthcare infrastructure needs serious support. Climate change will only exacerbate natural disasters and spur the creation of new pandemics. Revolutionizing global health systems to be accessible and well-prepared will ensure that they are ready for the next crisis and able to mitigate the effects on our world more quickly. This is a big one. Let's end conflict. Conflict is one of the leading causes of environmental destruction. The U.S. military is one of the country's largest greenhouse gas emitters. Ceasefires will reduce the energy expended on violence and also give countries the security, stability, and resources needed to reform their economies for the better. I know that that's a big one, that's a lofty one. It kind of seems like we threw it in at the end with a hope that we can just say end conflict, and it's a bit more complicated than that, but I think we can start envisioning a future where conflict is not the goal. COVID-19 has reduced pollution, boosted animal populations, and decreased greenhouse gas emissions. These changes are great, but they are not enough to save us from the inevitable consequences of climate change. We need to, and we get to, implement real sustainable changes in our reopened economics to safeguard the health of our planet for generations to come.
I love this story. I really like the aspect of revolutionizing our public transportation because, especially after living in Europe last year, you can see that you can make public transportation systems that are affordable and efficient and also create a culture where people use them and want to use them. So I'm optimistic that we can create that same dynamic in the United States.
I think that aligned with using the resources that were previously allocated toward parking and toward driving, and instead allocating those resources toward wider open spaces for whether it's restaurants on larger patio areas, having the ability to spread people out more. So let's stop using all of our space to get to and from and to manage the waste that we expend getting to and from, and instead allocate that energy and effort and resources toward being where we are in an expanded, beautiful space. Great article, guys. Thank you so much for sharing that on the Optimist Daily.
Our next article is from the technology section of the Optimist Daily. This VR system lets you physically feel objects in the virtual world. Virtual reality systems, VR, today typically manipulate just two senses, sight and sound, to make users feel like they've been transported to a new environment. But now, researchers have created a cheap, lightweight device that provides realistic haptic feedback, meaning it could allow you to feel a virtual world in a way that wasn't previously possible. The haptic feedback device, Wirality, is the work of a team of researchers at Carnegie Mellon University, who published a paper on the system in the Association for Computing Machinery's Digital Library. The device itself attaches to a person's shoulder. 7 strings extend from it to connect to their hand, with 1 string attached to each fingertip, 1 to the wrist, and 1 to the palm. Inside Wirality, the strings connect to spring-loaded retractors, and the team built a ratchet mechanism that uses electronically controlled latches to lock or release the strings. The haptic feedback device works in conjunction with the hand tracking sensor that researchers attached to the VR headset. When the sensor detects that the wearer's hand is near an object in the virtual world, the system triggers the latches to lock or release in a way that makes the person feel like they're touching the virtual object. If the user reaches out to touch a virtual wall, for example, all of the strings might lock when the finger's palm and wrist are perpendicular to the floor. If they reach towards a VR ball, though, the palm might stop before the fingers, giving the sensation that the hand is curving around the object. This isn't the first wearable designed to provide haptic feedback while someone uses a VR system, or even the first to use strings to deliver that feedback. But past string-based haptic feedback systems have relied on electric motors to control the strings, and those motors are both heavier and more power-hungry than the electronically controlled latches in Wireality. Plus, the CMU's team's device is cheaper, with estimates showing they could be mass-produced for between $35 and $50, making it far more affordable than, say, the $5,000 Tesla suit glove.
This story works really well in concert with the story you read yesterday about neurotransmitters and neurofeedback as far as prosthesis engineering is going. And I love to see the ability of technology to begin to help us have a better sense of what it is to feel in both virtual reality as well as for those who have previously had disabilities and are unable to do so. This is great. I'm excited to sort of see how it unfolds. It's a little like the drones and the robots and the other stories that sometimes we read and think, uh-oh, where is this going? But you can see how this could definitely be used in a positive experience for those who are struggling with touch or feel to regain control or access to those tools.
I agree. It also reminds me of that story we talked about a couple months ago during the Australian wildfires, how they were using VR to train firefighters in a safer way. They were putting firefighters in a VR fire and training them all the techniques used to fight fires without actually putting their lives and lungs on the line.
Yeah, that's a great application for this as well. Our next story also has some environmental applications. Minnesota scientists are making an experimental forest for a future climate. The landscape of Minnesota is changing as the climate crisis intensifies. Animals and plants that once were found in the southern part of the state have moved north, suggesting that as the climate changes, Minnesota by 2100 will start to resemble the environment similar to the one found in Kansas, a few states to the south. Lee Freelich, the director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, believes that if the climate crisis goes unchecked, the boreal forests that soak up huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere could vanish completely, taking with them a third of the state's native species of trees, flowers, birds, and pollinators. That's why Freelich and a group of scientists are trying to understand exactly how the changing climate will affect Minnesota, what species will thrive, and are starting to plant trees that will one day take the place of the ones native to the state, according to the Washington Post. In the northeast corner of the state, scientists are planting an experimental forest under different climatic conditions. They have built 10 30-foot-tall open-top chambers. Each of those chambers are warmed from above and below ground. The other two are controls. Half of the chambers also have elevated levels of carbon dioxide. By doing this, scientists can simulate how trees will react under warmer conditions caused by global heating. One of the bolder parts of the experimental forest is the planting of trees that once would not have been found here, but are expected to flourish in a future that scientists foresee in Minnesota's north woods. The reasons motivating this experimental forest are, in fact, rather grim, but what these scientists are showing us all is the need to be proactive, rather than assuming there's nothing you can do. While we know that the climate crisis is real, only when we recognize that we can do something about it, we can affect change. And I think this is such a great story for anyone who is up and coming in environmental design and looking at future careers in the green and sustainable world. It is about coming up with new solutions, and perhaps as our world changes and as our climate changes, we can't get back to what it once was, but we could chart a path to a better future. I love this story, and I love the woods of Minnesota. I've spent many a summer there doing kayaking and canoeing with friends, and I would love to see them maintained for their beauty, even if it's a different version of tree in the future.
Nice. I've never been, but I'll add it to my list of places to visit.
You're going to have a lot of time now that you're going to be done with college soon, my dear.
I know, so many exciting possibilities. Our next story is from the business section of the Optimist Daily, how the pandemic is expected to make businesses more socially responsible. The corporate world has long been under the radar to do its part in tackling issues like inequality and climate change. Now, as businesses struggle to survive in the pandemic, some might emerge with better social and environmental practices. At least that's what Harvard Business School professor Rebecca Henderson thinks, who has recently published her new book, Reimagining Capitalism in a World on Fire. Wow, what a title. The first point is that the pandemic is forcing companies to think about purpose. According to Henderson, the pandemic has the potential to encourage corporates to step away from seeing profit as the end goal of their existence and rather center their practices on deeper purpose instead. Such changes in behavior can already be seen in companies that have shifted their lines of production during the outbreak to make more protective equipment for doctors, or employ their industry knowledge to come up with other helpful solutions. And while we must remain vigilant of those companies that are serious about making a difference, and those who adopt a mission statement because they think it makes them sound better, Henderson believes that the pandemic is leading to more businesses to think genuinely about purpose. Her next point is that companies are thinking more about inequality. In her book, Henderson mentions that in meetings with company leaders, it's been easier for her to raise environmental issues than bringing up the problem of inequality, which most of them think is just someone else's job to take care of. Now, as the pandemic has laid bare existing inequalities, the issue is impossible to ignore. Henderson thinks it's now likely that more companies may adopt practices where employees are seen as being as important to the company's success as its products and services. Work-life balance may potentially also improve as managers who have suddenly been forced to work from home become more aware of the challenges of childcare. Lastly, sustainability work can continue. Even before the outbreak, companies have already been realizing that greening up their business practices bodes well for their long-term survival. The best job candidates want to work for companies that are committed to climate action, and investors are pushing for climate action. Companies recognize the risks that they face themselves if climate change continues unabated. According to Henderson, these environmental actions are likely to continue after the crisis. At a broader scale, the pandemic could lead to a far more investment in green technology through recovery packages. I really like this story because I think it's highly applicable. Throughout the pandemic, we've seen lowered investment in coal and fossil fuels, and we've seen a boosted role for the renewable energy sector, and I think that's a big change that's coming as we reopen our economies, a turned focus towards greener energy.
It's just really exciting to see, and I think we need to, as stakeholders in our climate and in our world, really encourage businesses and those we know going into these industries to focus and support, whether it is through policy support or just our overall media focus. This is what we need for a new and a better world. I have to tell everyone, I'm going to let you guys in on a little background secret. Amelia had to record that story 3 times because I think our internet here went out because my kids are both in online Zoom classes, and Amelia's got a bunch of roommates, and she is currently sitting in her bathroom on the toilet where there is the best Wi-Fi. So
I am. Gotta do what you gotta do to make the podcast happen.
Exactly. Just a little behind the curtain, the reality of podcasting in a COVID quarantine world.
Behind the shower curtain.
Yeah, behind a shower curtain as my dog is shaking and scratching her collar. Oh, what a mess. Anyway, great story and great future ahead. Our last story today comes from the health section of the Optimist Daily. It's another AI story. AI helps diagnose signs of glaucoma 18 months earlier than current methods. From kidney stones to heart trouble to cancer, artificial intelligence stands to revolutionize the field of medical diagnostics by spotting signs of disease earlier than us humans are capable of. Now, aided by the technology, scientists have developed a quick test to identify which people with glaucoma are at risk of rapid progression to blindness. Glaucoma, the leading cause of irreversible blindness, affects over 60 million people and is driven by the death of cells in the retina. Diagnosing the disease in its early stage can help people prevent its progression and maintain sight. The test, called DARC, Detection of Apoptosing Retinal Cells, involves injecting into the bloodstream a fluorescent dye that attaches to retinal cells and illuminates those that are in the process of death, known as apoptosis. These dying cells appear bright white when viewed in eye exams, and by incorporating AI into this method, the researchers aim to remove the element of human error when diagnosing the disease, as specialists often disagree when viewing the same scans. Testing the AI augmented technique involved analyzing scans of 60 patients, 20 with glaucoma and 40 as healthy controls. The subjects were then assessed 18 months later, with the AI-powered analysis proving an accurate predictor of the progressive damage caused by glaucoma. Every patient with a count of white spots over a certain threshold was shown to have progressive glaucoma at the 18-month follow-up point. This was still 18 months before the condition was able to be detected by the existing gold standard retinal image technology, indicating that DARC shows promise as a biomarker when combined with AI. The scientists are hopeful that with further work, this new technology can become a common tool for clinicians. That's a great solution coming from the health world and technology and science, and there are a lot more great solutions that are coming out of the world today. And we just want everybody to stay positive, to stay solution focused, and to stay optimistic. Thank you guys for participating with the Optimist Daily and for helping Amelia and I get through these two challenging days of recording. We hope it wasn't too crazy for you guys to listen to. All right, Amelia, so that's it. It's a wrap. You're done, right? You're out of the Christie seat. Do you think it'd be something maybe you'll step in while I'm on vacation in a couple weeks?
Definitely. I've really enjoyed being a part of this and taking a more hands-on role in the podcast the last couple days. Maybe you'll hear my voice again in the coming weeks when Summers gets some time off.
You know, yesterday you said something, Amelia, in our team meeting about having had your day lifted just by joining and reading the positive news. Tell me about that.
I did. You know, I woke up and I sat down, and we get to start our mornings, as I always do, by checking out the daily stories from The Optimist. And it was such an uplifting experience, you know, pick my favorite and then sit down and read them out loud. I stood up from our recording with just a sense of positivity. I was ready to go about my day. There's something really powerful about not only reading positive news, but reading it out loud with a smile on your face. The best way to get my day started.
Exactly. It's like affirmations and optimism. Thank you for listening to the Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share positive, solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
Please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com, and for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be a part of the solution-changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, Summers. Bye.